We're trying to conduct a serious scientific investigation.
Science, logic, reason.
Do you have any hard data?
Now, that's what I call science.
Hello, listeners. You're tuned in to That's What I Call Science, the weekly radio and podcast show bringing you independent and interesting STEM, so that's science, technology, engineering, maths and medicine, from Tasmania. This show is supported by Edge Radio, Hobart's premium youth station, so head on over to edge.org.au for more information about them. I'd like to begin today's episode by acknowledging the traditional owners of the land on which we are recording, the Palawa people. We're recording here on Lutruwita, and as we are a podcast, I would also like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land from where you, our listener, are tuning in from. On behalf of everyone here in the studio, I pay my respects to elders past and present. My name is Ollie Dove, and I'm joined today by my guest, Vimasha Kadithuwaku, one of the three recipients of the Inspiring Women in STEM Fellowships by Science in the Pub Tasmania. Last week, we heard from Mali, and I'm really excited to hear from Vimasha this week. Originally from Sri Lanka, Vimasha is currently a PhD candidate at the Menzies Institute for Medical Research at the University of Tasmania, and her work focuses on early vascular aging among children, adolescents, and young adults. Now, we'll be tapping into her work later on in the show, but I'd like to track back to the very beginning and ask you, did you always have plans or an interest in ending up in medical science?
Hey, Ollie, thank you for having me today. And that's a hard question because I had a very interesting journey into medical science, and I tried a few other things as well. But as for an answer to your question, I would say that at the beginning, no, I was not expecting to end up in medical research.
What was that journey into medical research then?
So to begin with, I did my bachelor's in Ayurvedic medicine and surgery. To those who have never heard of it, it's a traditional medical system in Sri Lanka and also in India. Like most of the South Asian people practice Ayurvedic medicine. And then after I finished my bachelor's, then I did a master's in applied psychology, hoping into continuing into a career in psychology and counseling. But then I moved to Australia and moved into health management. So I also followed a master's in health and human services management. And then I worked in implementation science. And then I moved to a PhD in medical research.
Oh, wow. That was a bit of everything there. So did you move to Australia for that second master's specifically?
Yes, I did.
And what was it about that second master's that attracted you? What brought about the change from psychology into that topic?
So as a part of my bachelor's program, we had to do a one-year internship in government hospitals in Sri Lanka. There I discovered that there's a higher prevalence on non-communicable diseases in Sri Lankan people. I think it is very common to all the South Asia, but I specifically experienced this in my community. So I thought that by following health management, something in health management would help me to interfere, you know, like in disease prevention. So I thought that I'd follow a master's in health management where I can then after my master's can involve in health administration and then sort of intervene in health prevention, preventing non-communicable diseases in my population. That was the aim of following that second master's.
What was it like moving overseas and away from your family and friends back home?
So I followed my master's at Deakin University, so I had to move to Melbourne for that. I had to left my parents behind, but I had my husband with me and also my brother. And the terrible thing that happened was this was right in the beginning of COVID. So,
oh, as soon as you said the terrible thing that happened, I was like, oh, is the COVID word coming? Oh, the classic. Have you been able to visit your parents since the pandemic?
No. Oh, not at all. No, I'm visiting them this year after 3.5 years, actually.
Oh, that's going to be such a great reunion.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. We have seen, like, talking to each other every day, and then through video we are seeing each other, but it's not like you're physically there and hugging them.
Yeah, I can definitely empathize with that. My parents are back in the UK, so I moved to Tassie 3 months before COVID.
Okay.
And then, but I got to go back last year.
We were really planning to do it last year, but then I had to move interstate, so that didn't really happen.
And what brought about the move interstate? Why did you want to come down to Utah's away from Deakin?
So after, like, it's not really after my master's, but during the last trimester of my master's, I was looking for job opportunities, and then I managed to work as a research assistant for Baker Heart and Diabetes Institute. Working as a research assistant, I think that I found my passion. I thought that I would continue into research, and then I started looking for PhD opportunities. So this is a long story, but I was working on adults almost all the time. So I thought that if I'm going to do a significant job or in disease prevention, I must be able to work in childhood where I can intervene, and then I can approach prevention like in early stage of life. So I was looking for PhD opportunities that are sort of working on childhood disease prevention. That's when I found this project at UTAS, and then I thought, since I got the scholarship, I thought I'd move interstate.
And that is actually a perfect way to end part one of our interview today, because that's what we're going to be talking about in part two. So listeners, stick with us when we look into that research. Welcome back, listeners. You're tuned into That's What I Call Science. I'm Ollie Dove, and I'm here with Vimasha, one of the 2023 Inspiring Women in STEM Fellowship winners and a medical researcher at the University of Tasmania. Now, you heard just at the end of the last section a sort of teaser about what Vimasha's studying. So, can you tell us, what is your PhD topic?
So, I'm working on vascular aging. If that term is new to you, it observes on the structural and functional changes of the blood vessels. So I'm particularly working on children, where I observe the changes in the blood vessels from the childhood to adolescents and young adults, which is up to 35, 40 years.
So correct me if I'm wrong, but vascular means vessel?
Blood
vessels specifically.
Yeah, blood vessels.
And what exactly is involved in how do you assess your work?
So all over the world, heart diseases are a big problem. And they are spending a lot of money in preventing or like treatments of the heart diseases in adulthood specifically. They have to work on the rehabilitation after heart surgery, and a lot of money goes into that and also to heart surgeries. So this vascular aging is sort of how our blood vessels get aged, but with certain risk factors. The vessels get older before us, which means that it's sort of accelerating the aging process of our blood vessels.
And what factors make them age?
So there are different factors. Now there are evidence that these factors can be even before the birth, like how your mother eat or like how your mother gain weight or her changes in her blood or changes in the uterine environment, which is like where baby grows. So these changes or even environmental exposure such as smoke or even global warming can affect this.
How can global warming affect it?
There are a few evidence on how global warming affects certain heart diseases, but unfortunately it was not observed in children. So that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to figure out these risk factors that are that can affect these changes in blood vessels from the very beginning of the childhood, or even before you born, like when you're inside your mother.
That's terrifying to think that global warming can be affecting you even before you're in the globe, in a sense.
Yeah, actually there are evidence that suggesting the vessel changes can be due to a bushfire. In there are research, certain research in top of my mind that bushfire can affect the child's blood vessel changes when they even before they born.
And that's understandably a huge issue to be addressed. Yes. Here in Australia, given the risk of bushfires. Mm-hmm. So with your PhD research and the different factors that you're looking into and trying to unpack, are you using data that has already been collected on this and trying to analyze it, or are you collecting more data?
So I'm getting my data from Youth Vascular Consortium. It is a large international collaborative database, and there are about 40 collaborators so far from different parts of the world. Most of them are from the Europe and also South America, Africa, and even South Asia, and also Australia and New Zealand. We are also trying to get more data into this database because we are trying to establish how to measure these vascular changes. To do that, we need to have lot of data that we can analyze and establish certain reference values. If that confuses you, let me explain it. So when we are measuring blood sugar, we know that blood sugar above certain limit is not good. But for this vascular aging, we don't really have proper evidence on what is really bad in children. There are research done on adults, but for children, we don't really have much data on what is the limit of this and what is really bad and what can accelerate this, or like, let's say that above 2 is bad, but how bad?
How do you measure vascular change? Because like your blood vessels are inside a person.
Yeah.
So how are we finding out what's happening in there?
Mm-hmm. So there are actually invasive methods which like you pump.
Like a needle?
Yeah.
Inject?
Or something. But I'm particularly interested on non-invasive method where you measure it not by putting a needle inside, but like a cuff methods where like how GP measures your blood pressure, like put a cuff or a probe if you ever done an ultrasound, like how it worked. So I'm particularly interested on non-invasive methods. There is a method that we can really measure how your blood waves goes inside your blood vessels, and by that we can really get an idea on how thick your vessel wall is by how fast your blood waves go. That so that we can measure the wave. We call this pulse wave velocity. We are measuring the wave actually. So not by an invasive method, it's a non-invasive method. And there are also other measures that we can get an idea of the thickness of the blood, certain blood vessels that we are interested on. These are all non-invasive methods that we can measure this vascular aging or changes.
And do you tend to have in the studies controls? So you have children and young adults that you would presume to have healthier blood vessels and those that you might expect to not, and you compare, or is it just random surveying of people interested in being involved?
So this is not a sort of a case control study, what we call in science, where we have controls and cases. The database I'm working on is mainly on the healthy people. So as I told you, that there's no exact reference values for this vascular aging. So first we have to discover this concept in the healthy people. So at the moment I'm working on establishing these values in the healthy people. Then after that we can continue on like how it is in diseased people with certain disease conditions, and then we can determine whether those diseases are also accelerating this vascular aging in children.
It makes complete sense to need a baseline before you can tell what's happening.
That is it, yes.
With vascular aging, has that been a known concept for a long time, or is it becoming more and more relevant in the medical research field?
The vascular aging is a normal scenario, I would say, because like as we all get older, our organs and vessels get older, which is normal. But recently, researchers has observed changes in the blood vessels among children who died from other causes such as trauma. They found that there are certain changes in the blood vessels, which means that even though those children were healthy at the time of their death, but these changes in blood vessels are concerning because even at age below 5 years, there are those changes, there were changes. So that sort of I think that signifies the importance of early vascular aging, the concept of early vascular aging, the vascular aging that occurs earlier in life. And then I think there are more studies coming out on how we can detect these certain changes, and then how to intervene and then prevent occurrence of heart diseases later in life or in adulthood.
Wow, your work sounds incredibly important to help protect current generations aging and also the future generations that are coming through. So stick with us, listeners, for part three as we find out about Vimasha's involvement with the Inspiring Women in STEM Fellowship. Welcome back, listeners. You're tuned into That's What I Call Science, and today I am joined by Vimasha Kodithuwaku from the Menzies Institute for Medical Research at the University of Tasmania. So Vimasha, a huge congratulations for being awarded one of the three 2023 Inspiring Women in STEM Fellowships by Science in the Pub Tasmania. It's a fabulous scheme, and it helps fund STEM researchers to conduct outreach projects either here in Tasmania or back in their home communities. So Vimasha, what are your plans for the funding you received?
Thanks, Ali. I feel very blessed for receiving this, and then I'm planning on reaching out to two or three rural schools in Sri Lanka. My plan is to encourage them to engage in science-related activities so that they would grow an interest towards science. And then I'm hoping that they will continue into science in their future.
And what was the main driver to coordinating this project?
When I was in Sri Lanka, I observed that there are certain schools that has had very less resources. And because of this less resources, a lot of children don't get a chance to engage in science-related activities. I think this is very important, that science is not sort of a theoretical subject, I say, because I think that the more you engage in activities, the more you grow interest towards it. It is also a good way to understand certain concepts in chemistry, physics and biology, the main three STEM subjects that are in school size. Even for me, I did not get a chance to involve in many practical activities during my school time. So I think it is really important that school children are getting this chance so that they can really give it a thought whether they really want to continue into this. So I think to facilitate this, I thought that I'll provide this hands-on models that are suitable for the school curriculum, where they can engage in interesting science-related activity.
Great. What does the timeline look like for this project?
So, I already selected one school, and then I already got up the resources that I need to provide to this school. But I'm also trying to reach out to another two schools as well. So I'm planning to do this in 6 weeks when I'm going to visit Sri Lanka, and then provide them with these models, and then making them aware on the opportunities that you can really do if you continue into STEM field. Like, there are a lot of opportunities, I think, worldwide, but the problem is lack of awareness, I'd say, and then lack of role models as well. So I'm hoping to make them aware on the opportunities that you really have if you continue into STEM.
That's so true. You often hear the saying, you can't be what you can't see.
Yes.
Because especially with women in STEM, it's seen that if young girls don't have those role models, they don't realize that it's a potential career for them as well. So, Marsha, have you been involved in this sort of science communication outreach type stuff previously, or is this your first time in that?
Not officially, but I was just talking to people who were asking me on certain things, but not officially where I get a chance to go to school and speak. And I think for my mother country, Sri Lanka, it is really important because there are certain cultural aspects that tends to limit their opportunities. They might ask to get married and then like grow a family or committed their potentials to a family. So I think it is really important to make them aware on the opportunities beyond that cultural aspect. And I think they really need some role models in science so that they can see actually what it can do to you.
Absolutely. And if you could go back in time and talk to young Vimasha sat in that classroom, what piece of advice would you give to your younger self?
I would say never give up. I think, I had many, hard situations. Then I pushed myself through. So I would say to everybody and young Vimasha, never give up.
Wonderful. A truly wholesome and important message to leave our listeners with. Well, thank you so much, Vimasha, for being here today. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in to That's What I Call Science. We love bringing you STEM-related content, and I really hope you enjoyed the show. If you loved it, you can get in touch with us by searching That's What I Call Science or That's Science Taz on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. My name is Ollie Dove, and I'd like to extend a huge thank you once more to my guest, Vimasha Kadithuwaku, for joining me today. We had Marley last week, we've got Mona next week to complete our trilogy of inspiring women in STEM, so see you then. Hope you all have a wonderful week.
This program was made possible with support from the Community Broadcasting Foundation. Find out more at cbf.org.au. You've been listening to That's What I Call Science, brought to your station and across the nation via the Community Radio Network. You can find That's What I Call Science on all major podcast streaming services and social media platforms. Like and subscribe for on-demand science updates from the team. That's What I Call Science is proudly recorded in Tasmania at Edge Radio. Head to edgeradio.org.au for more information on how you can support community radio. GemMaker are a proud sponsor of That's What I Call Science. GemMaker provide expert advice, services and training to commercialise new knowledge and technologies. Go to gemmaker.com.au for more information.